Member of the American Herbalist Guild. She also teaches at in the Boulder area at Naropa University, Boulder College of Massage. When you're out in the California coast area, she teaches at the Esalen Institute. And then there's a wonderful yoga center called Kripalu that she teaches at. And she's even been called in to teach at the Mayo Clinic, the University of Colorado, and has been a featured guest at many Natural Products Expo. And, of course, for your personal benefit, Brigitte has a private practice and works as a practitioner for Pharmaca. She is a mother of two wonderful children, Sunflower Sparkle Mars, with whom she leads a herb camp for kids, as well as Sunflower's sister, Rainbow Harmony Mars, and Rainbow... Her daughter is an actress, eco-activist, model, and yogini living in Santa Monica. Whoa, what a family, folks. And I mean, if you want to take a look at some of this, I know some of you can open multiple windows so you can be listening. Her website, www.brigittemars.com. Anyway, here we go. Brigitte, welcome.
Ken, it is such a pleasure. Thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, I am thrilled. I've been looking over some of the information about your books and background, and I am just feeling excited. I feel like I've opened a door to a fabulous amount of health information that comes without having to go to doctors and address all kinds of terrible, sometimes lengthy, costly therapeutic processes. I mean... This looks fabulous. So tell me, I mean, 36 years, how'd you get interested in all this?
Well, I certainly wasn't blessed with great health as a child. I, like many children, I had frequent ear infections, tonsil infections, was given lots of antibiotics as a teenager, and even into my adult years I had acne. So I think I was on a personal quest to figure out a way to get healthy because multiple visits to the doctors and taking lots of antibiotics were really not making me healthier and stronger or benefiting my immune system. I grew up in Syracuse, New York, but I had this wonderful French-Canadian grandmother in a little village called Baie St. Paul, north of Quebec, and I would go visit my grandmother, and she practiced the ancient ways. She used herbs. She grew a garden. She made maple syrup. Her idea of snow of ice cream was to put hot maple syrup on fresh fallen snow. She made soap in a cauldron out in the yard. So going to visit my grandmother was like going back in another time zone because, you know, she didn't have a refrigerator. She used a root cellar and a wood stove because it really was like going back 100 years. And this was in the early 50s. So my grandmother became sort of a role model for me. She, you know, wove and spun and sewed, and I was fascinated by all those things. And, you know, to be honest, I think, Ken, one of the reasons I liked them, all of those things that went on, because her life was a lot like the fairy tales, you know, spinning and potions and, you know, collecting herbs. And to me, it just seemed like magic or something.
Yeah.
So I remember there were several occasions where I would find a wounded animal in the woods, you know, a bird with a broken wing, and my grandmother would say, let's bring it home and treat it with herbs, and then we'll let it go. And so that was part of the process, that I could see that within a few days we could help save some little animal and release it back into the woods. And then by the time I was a teenager, I went to an all-girls boarding school. I was using herbs to treat my classmates. And every time I had a project at school, whether it be English history or biology, I would turn it into an opportunity to learn about herbs. Herbs during the reign of Henry VIII, or the pharmacognosy of modern drugs compared to traditional plants. And so I would always just use it as an opportunity to learn more about healing. And by the time I was 17, I was managing a natural food store in the Virgin Islands.
Oh, and even, talk about fun.
It was great fun. And even then, I was done with high school. I learned about herbs in the Virgin Islands. I lived in a commune. Yes, it was the 70s, and so that was part of the lifestyle.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things I learned was to harvest wild fruits from the rainforest, and we would even go out in a kayak and harvest seaweeds from the ocean and dry them on a clothesline and then use that as wonderful, nourishing food. So I was just amazed at how much that the earth could provide. And I had both my children at home, so again, this wasn't just something I read out of books. I was a believer and committed to, hey, before I can tell other people about this, I need to totally commit my life to using this. Otherwise, how can I really be honest and true and deep about all of it? So for 2.5 years, I lived in a commune in the Ozarks in Missouri, and we ate nothing but wild edible plants.
Oh.
And back then, it was the hillbillies who really were wonderful teachers for me. I would talk to these old hillbilly women who were very generous in their time, and they would show me what the plants look like and tell me things like, you know, that there's lamb's quarter. It's wild spinach, and it's good for you. So I totally learned to respect the weeds, and rather than thinking that weeds were some horrible thing we had to buy toxic herbicides for, that you could get 2 to 3 times the yield of your garden if you would learn to eat the weeds. And that's exactly what we did. And I'll tell you, it was a very healthy way to live, and I still eat lots of wild plants.
Are some of these listed in any of your books so that people can have a way to go out there and locate some of these things?
They all are. Rossum has a very nice section on wild edible plants. Healing Herbal Teas talks about a lot of herbs that are in people's gardens and growing wild that you can make tea out of. But right now, I'm very excited. I'm writing a book about my life in the 60s and 70s, and I'm calling it Wildflower Child. But there's going to be a lot of teaching in there about living on the land and respecting the earth and what I learned from all of these wise people that were in my life.
Oh, that's quite tempting.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I try to work on my book, Wildflower Child, every Thursday, so I've gotten my time in today.
Oh, good. And, this is exciting. Now, I know so much of our culture has become kind of like conditioned to turning to the doctor and taking pharmaceuticals. Certainly there's good that's been done with that, yet sometimes if you look at a physician's desk reference, anything out there that the pharmacy has, there's usually a whole list of, of terrible possible side effects. And I don't know if that would be the same case in taking herbs. Is there that much scary side effects from herbs? Or?
Well, what I like to remind people is that herbs really are the traditional medicine. So when someone, whether it be a physician or a customer, says, I'm really just using traditional medicine, I'd like to say, you can't tell me that Prozac has a long tradition of being used, whereas you can tell me that chamomile and peppermint and ginger have an ancient history of being used for thousands of years by millions of people. And I think, and again, I am very blessed. We all are blessed. We live in a time where there's lots of choices, and I'm certainly not denying that antibiotics can be life-saving, that hospitals are amazing at, reattaching a limb or doing surgeries, performing cesareans that may have cost the lives of women and children years ago. So believe me, I'm not saying let's shut down all the hospitals. I am grateful that we have such wonderful technology available. But one of the things that happened in the early 1900s was we forgot about the ancient tradition. I think people who were coming to this country from Ireland, from Italy, from Russia, and so forth, wanted so much to be American that there was almost some embarrassment about ways of the old country. And I know, having had a French mother and a Russian father, at least as far as their heritage goes, that they were always baffled, and it was a little bit of an embarrassment that I would use something that they considered the medicine from the old country. But in the old country, they never stopped using the herbs, whereas in North America, they pretty much just took all the herbs off the shelves for about 50 years, and then in the 60s, they started getting reinstated. However, there certainly was a movement towards better health when I think of the works of, Adele Davis and Lee Lord Cordell, and even Gloria Swanson was an actress who was a big health advocate, Bernard Jensen. So it didn't just start in the 60s. There were certainly pioneers, J.J. Rodale, who was publishing Organic Gardening magazine, I think even in the late 30s. So I don't want to make it sound like we invented it, but the interest in the Renaissance really started happening in the late 60s.
Okay, well, that's not a moment too soon.
And do herbs have side effects? I mean, there are some herbs that are poisonous. I mean, if you rub poison ivy on your body or make a tea out of it, that's going to be really terrible. I mean, there's herbs that are poisonous, like poison hemlock, lily of the valley, mandrake. But there's also so many herbs that are very user-friendly. And it's an art and a science, and it's something that, one of the things I like to remind people that my dear sister Rosemary Gladstar says is, before you launch out and start taking a new herb, research it in at least 3 different places. Don't just start taking it every day without reading more about it.
Okay, well, that's important to be able to realize that, yes, that you do need to have some knowledge, and I guess that's one of the beautiful things that people, if they get your books or go to your website at BrigitteMars.com, BrigitteMars.com, they can look into these books, order them from you or from Amazon, I guess, and begin to get acquainted, and then can call upon you as a consultant
and
help them.
There are lots of books available now. There's also classes. I teach a 10-week class on herbal medicine that'll start in September. In June, I lead people on herb walks where I show them what some of the so-called weeds look like and how they can be used as food and medicine. So it's not secret information. I want people to know this. And it's time. And I think that the more people start using herbs, the better care they'll take of the planet. Right now, we're seeing the first dandelions up. And hopefully listeners, instead of thinking, dandelions, got to get something to stop those, they'd say, wow, I heard that you can eat the dandelion leaves before the plant flowers, that they're really high in iron, they build your blood, and that dandelion leaves are also very diuretic. and that dandelion root improves fat metabolism, and dandelion root is also a delicious herb that can be eaten as a food that's also beneficial for environmental illness, and that dandelion flowers are high in lutein, which can strengthen our vision and make us less susceptible to night blindness. So, you know, dandelions are recognized, but what most people think when they see them is, got to get something to get rid of them.
Yeah, I've been trained to think of them as a curse to the lawn.
And they are a blessing. They really are. And people in Europe used to have lawns that provided salad greens and food and herbs for making medicinal teas. And, of course, in this country, that was the case as well. And then in the late 1800s in England, the British aristocracy started this trend of having very manicured lawns that would be more appropriate for playing croquet and badminton, so that when people drove by and saw your lawn that was basically grass and maybe a few rose bushes and some topiaries, they'd say, oh, they must be so rich. So it was really a way of showing off, and yet we use about a third of our nation's water supply to water lawns. And weeds, you know, especially ones that are edible and medicinal, are very hardy, and they grow easily without a lot of care and fanfare and fertilizer. So we really need to rethink the way that we view the American lawn, and trying to grow non-native grasses and using so much of our nation's water supply, I don't think is going to be sustainable for the future. If I were president, I would have edible lawns, eat your lamb's quarter and your dandelion greens, and we would all have better health for it.
Wow. Okay, so I take it there's not huge benefits of grinding up a Kentucky bluegrass.
Well, you know, if you were in a survival situation, you could chew on most grasses and spit out the pulp. But, you know, you can't really swallow the grasses. We don't have multiple stomachs the way cows do that we can really benefit from that. But one of the great raw food pioneers, Ann Wigmore, observed her grandmother in Lithuania, I believe it was, heal wounded soldiers that she found in the woods with the juice from various grasses. And so the whole, you know, wheatgrass movement, remember that it really started with just wild grasses. And almost all of them contain chlorophyll, which is an excellent wound healer and infection inhibitor.
Okay, so it wouldn't have to be just wheatgrass. It could be all kinds of grasses that would be helpful.
Right. Young grasses that are about 10 inches tall before they go to seed are all going to yield this wonderful chlorophyll, this green essence in plants. And it's interesting, Ken, that there's only one atom of difference between chlorophyll and hemoglobin. Hemoglobin is the component that makes our blood red, mm-hmm. and there's only one atom of difference between that and chlorophyll, which makes plant juice green.
So
it's quite amazing. The center of a molecule of hemoglobin has iron at the center, whereas in chlorophyll it's magnesium at the center. But I certainly think that chlorophyll is a great way to build our blood. And you know, we were talking just a minute ago about, you know, going to the physician, and you know that it's wonderful we have choices. But something that I would also like to recommend to our listeners is to take more responsibility for your own health. There's a saying now, who is your primary healthcare professional? You should be your primary healthcare professional, and then everybody else should be secondary and tertiary. Really count on yourself. Don't blame your doctor when you get sick. Don't blame God when you're stricken with an illness. Learn to take some responsibility and see if there's something that you're doing that might be contributing to illness or health.
Wow, there's an old song that says, be your own best friend. and now you're inviting us to be our own first line of health.
Absolutely. And then, you know, when you need to learn more or what you're doing isn't working, certainly consult a health professional, but make it your business to learn more about your health. It's amazing how many adults I meet that really don't know where their kidneys are, where their adrenal glands are, where their gallbladder is, or what the function of any of those organs are.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't emphasized when I went to school years ago.
No, it was kind of like, well, you know, only your doctor needs to know that. But,
yeah.
You know, time to wake up a little bit more and learn more. So it's really quite fun. Makes life more interesting.
Oh, wow. Now, yeah, in any of your books, I know that you do have a book called Dandelion Medicine, which I guess would explain a lot more about what you were talking about earlier.
Yes, unfortunately, that Dandelion Medicine, which is a dear book, is out of print in English, but it's doing very well in China.
Oh.
Where it's published in Chinese, and there it's a big hit. But I think I was hoping that that book would decrease the sale of herbicides and get people to appreciate the dandelion, but the company that published it in this country got sold and really changed their focus. So Dandelion Medicine is no longer. You can find them on Amazon sometime for a high price.
Oh, okay, or get it used or something like
that.
Oh, okay. And I guess it's not an option to create it as an e-book that people could download?
You know, I'll have to look into that, Ken. Thanks for the suggestion.
Yeah. Who knows? I mean, because that sounds so fascinating. I'm here also wondering about how would a person would if they wanted to have a yard that was an old-fashioned yard that would have wonderful things in it. I think it might have been Reverend Hannah Kroger, another herbalist.
Oh, yes.
That some of the yards, is it tansy or blue tansy that sometimes grows as a weed?
Well, tansy can take over and grow quite prolifically, but a lot of people plant a tansy because it repels bugs and helps to keep flies away from the household and all that. You know, Hannah Kroger, I had the pleasure of meeting her on many occasions, but she died a few years ago. But she is a legend and was an herbalist in Boulder and had a very large following and is known around the world, actually.
Yeah. Well, and I'm wondering, do you have any reference for how a person could actually use their yard and plant some lawn that would be a healing lawn instead of just a... the old standard boring grass?
Well, you know, right now it's springtime, and one of the first plants to bloom is the violet. And violet makes a wonderful ground cover. It doesn't grow too tall. The leaves are edible at all times of the year. The leaves are considered an anti-cancer herb. Don't we need more things to prevent cancer in our culture?
Oh, gosh, yes.
And the violet flowers are so aromatic in the springtime. And you know what I made on... I think it was Sunday night, I made violet ice cream with raw almond milk and coconut oil and agave syrup and a handful of violets, and I had a few friends over, and we had violet ice cream. We felt like we were, like, you know, royalty from another dimension.
Yeah. So people on a tight budget could take advantage of some of these things in getting your books and learning about doing some things with raw foods.
And yes, in our house, raw's the law. I've been raw for 7 years. I actually spoke against raw foods for many years, Ken, because I have a background in Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine say cook your food. It makes it more digestible. But what I'd like to tell listeners that, you know, we don't eat just salad. We cook our food without heat. And so cooking without heat means things like marinating, fermenting, pureeing, finely grating, blending, juicing. And we do enjoy wonderful foods like lasagna and pad thai and ravioli and tacos and enchiladas. I mean, there's raw potlucks twice a month in Boulder that I think are absolutely wonderful. And I believe there's raw potlucks in Denver as well. Might be something to Google, but... Yeah, we live in a wonderful time, and I, despite having spoken against raw foods, my daughter Rainbow, when she went to Hollywood to make movies, decided to go raw because her roommate was a raw chef named Giuliano, and I went out there to save my daughter. My husband and I were going to go talk some sense into her, and we saw how beautiful she looked and how delicious and healthful Giuliano's food was, and decided, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it for a year. My husband said, I'll do it most of the time. And 1 year's turned into 7 years.
Ah.
And, you know, I just learned today that India has one of the highest rates of diabetes. I've long known that China has one of the highest rates of stomach cancer. So, you know, I think that cooking was part of our evolution, that people cooked because it was a way to preserve food when hygiene was poor and there was no refrigeration and people were eating a lot of meat and it was being hung up, you know, outside with flies all over it and you couldn't chill it. Well, cooking probably was a helpful thing, but we can't say that it's brought us perfect health when one out of four people can expect to get cancer, and, you know, wherever two or more are gathered, one is on Prozac and the other one has heart disease. So, hey, come on, let's rethink this paradigm, people. Maybe what we've been doing hasn't been working so great. It's time to try something new.
Now, one thing, and I don't know if you can address this, there was an acupuncturist was talking during the winter time that the foods that weren't cooked would be hard. I don't know, was it on the spleen, perhaps?
Right.
And
I used to tell my clients the same thing, that you need to cook your food because uncooked food, if it's raw, will give you a cold, damp spleen. You know, whatever that means, that your spleen fire will be deficient and you'll have gas and bloating and so forth. But, you know, I have to share with you all that despite having cooked for years and years, my husband had terrible digestive problems. And now that he eats mostly raw, he doesn't have them at all. And, you know, they also would say you have to cook your food so you can survive the cold climate. But, you know, last time I was in Estes Park, Ken, I saw a bunch of elk, and I kept looking for where their campfire was, where they cooked their food.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't find it anywhere.
Maybe
the elk are eating their food raw. And I know, like out there in Estes Park, they say, don't feed the animal people food, it'll make them sick. Well, you know, I think it's doing the same thing to the humans, making them sick.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just not buying it any longer. And I also want to say that I don't feed my husband like, here, honey, here's a head of cabbage. I turn that cabbage into sauerkraut or pad thai or a borscht or, you know, finely grate it. So there are ways to cook without heat, because one of the very important factors that we destroy when we cook our food over 114 degrees are enzymes. And so by again, shredding, finely grating, marinating, we make the food more digestible, it's softer, it's easier to chew, for example, but we haven't killed that spark of life. And to me, the biggest example of life force is if you were to plant a raw sunflower seed, it has the potential life force of growing into a 8 to 10 foot tall plant. But if you planted a roasted sunflower seed, even if it was roasted just for 30 seconds, you've killed the life force in it. And it doesn't matter if you, you know, pray over it and say 10 Hail Marys and put a pyramid over it and give it Vichy water, that roasted seed is not going to do anything. You have killed the life force.
Wow.
And so it's enzymes. It's all about enzymes. And another thing we're learning in modern medicine right now is that almost all diseases are inflammatory in nature. All of the itis diseases, tonsillitis, cystitis, arthritis, bursitis, even tumors are inflammation. And what reduces inflammation? Enzymes. I really think we should be eating more enzymes from fresh raw food on a regular basis. And believe me, I was just going to do this for a year to warn my daughter, and if I didn't feel totally convinced that it was so worth it, I wouldn't still be doing it. So I am very impressed.
Ah, okay. And then for someone getting started, among your books, what do you recommend? Because there's a variety of them.
Well, Rawsum is my favorite book. It's also my best-selling book. And I'd say it's my personal favorite book because I use it every day, and we make food every day. We may not make love every day, but maybe we do, and then there's sex, love, and health. But Rossum, I'd say if you were going to have one book, I totally even travel with it because, you know, I still use most of the recipes in that book.
Oh, good.
And I think it's a really great way to start out. It has sections on it that include, you know, dining in restaurants when you're raw, holidays with family members, you know, what about being cold in winter, and how to have a raw party. And then I even have all kinds of theme dinners, like how to have a French dinner party, a Mexican dinner party, a Japanese dinner party. So I have all these little menus that are quite fun. But, you know, of course I love all the books that I've written. And my latest book that just came out is Beauty by Nature. And it's all about making your own body care products. Because what we put on our bodies, we absorb about 60% of that into our skin and into our bloodstream. So do you really want to be using mineral oil, which is a petroleum byproduct, and artificial color and fragrance? And do you really want to be supporting companies that test on animals and are polluting the earth, when really it can be very simple? And, you know, there's something, it's almost too scandalous to tell, but one of my favorite things to do lately in the morning when I get up and I make some kind of fruit for breakfast, fruit with maybe avocado, instead of using some kind of $40 cleanser on my skin, I'll just rub mashed avocado, banana, apple, pear, on my skin and leave it on for about 5 minutes and then rinse it off. It's a very inexpensive beauty secret. However, don't rub mangoes on your skin because mangoes are in the poison ivy family.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they're okay to eat.
They're okay to eat, but, you know, some people develop skin problems from eating lots of mangoes and cashews, which are also in the Anacardiaceae or poison ivy family.
Wow.
So it's good to know because, you know, a lot of people are doing their best to eat really healthily, but if they still suffer from eczema and psoriasis, I usually say back off those foods because they...
Ooh.
Some people notice when they eat mangoes, it causes an irritation on their chin area if the peel touches their skin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there are some people even that live in Hawaii that say, you know, I can't do it. It just irritates me, so... So watch out for that.
Now, it makes me curious, as you're making mention of these things,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you have it yet or if this is something that you could put together, but I'm kind of hearing this idea of kind of like things to be careful of and reasons for that. So you mentioned mango, you mentioned cashew. I mean, and those would be two things that most people go, oh, I love cashews, they're considered a treat. Instead of peanuts, this kind of a thing, and, you know, mangoes, another that, you know, well, papaya, mango kind of thing, and now you're giving me information that says, well, be careful of those two, and I'm thinking, okay, well, what else? I got to know, because
well,
I only got one body here.
Well, Rossum is probably my best book, because it does have a food materia medica, so you can look up, like, well, what are the health benefits of papaya? You can say, oh, they're high in papain, they're improved digestion, they're strengthening for the lungs. So I tell you the pros and sometimes cons of every herb, like, you know, too many macadamia nuts can be mucus forming or they can be acid forming. So I do talk about the most commonly used foods in that book. And so I think that would probably be the guide to look up. You know, I've been really craving celery. What's it good for? And so... you can look that up and see, oh, it's, you know, high in minerals and especially potassium. And then you say, oh, that must be why I really need it.
Mm. Okay.
Or why I should eat more of it, depending on your state of being.
Okay. Well, makes sense to me. All right. So Rossum is the way to get those. So we could look through and any of those favorite foods pretty quickly. We could determine which of some of those to be careful of.
Absolutely. And,
okay.
You know, I do think that many people sabotage their health by eating foods that they're allergic to. It's really common for Americans to overeat wheat, for example. It's said that the average American eats between one-third and two-thirds of their diet as wheat. And, you know, a lot of people say, why don't I eat any wheat? And then I look at their food journal. If they come to see me as a client, I say, look at this. Bagels, that's wheat. Pancakes, that's wheat. Muffins, that's wheat. Pizza, that's wheat. Pasta, that's wheat. So get it? You're eating a lot of wheat. A sandwich, that's wheat. A burrito, that's wheat. So wheat is a very common allergen, and a lot of people say, well, I eat whole wheat. Isn't that better? But if you've read any of the, you know, literature from the 50s about whole wheat, we have all supposedly learned that wheat germ needs to be refrigerated, but whole wheat products are usually not refrigerated, and therefore the wheat germ goes rancid, and eating rancid grains is really hard on your liver. Mm. And wheat is also a very hybridized food, and it's just overdone. So I really try to encourage people to back away from eating so many grains. There's certainly no harm that's going to come from eating more fresh fruits and vegetables. And yesterday I had a client, bless her heart, she has cancer and doesn't have much of an appetite. And, you know, the idea of eating, you know, a big salad doesn't really seem that appealing to her. It would be hard. She doesn't have that much energy. So I suggested that she, you know, blend her foods, like, you know, use a food processor or a blender to make a blended salad. Again, that's another example of cooking without heat. By blending it, you make the cell walls broken down, and it becomes easier to chew, and you can get a wider variety of nutrients with, you know, in a small amount of food. So,
okay, well, and blending it.
Blending it. Now, hey, if you've got teeth, chew your food, enjoy it. But, you know, some people are weakened, emaciated, have ulcers, colitis. They're not going to be able to benefit from eating things too fibrous. They have to ease into it more gradually.
Okay. So that would have made it into a puree?
To make it into a puree, but rather than buying canned baby food, which is all pasteurized, puree it yourself without heat.
Sure. Sure. Well, okay. All right. That sounds like a wonderful method to be able to do that.
Yeah, now, for people that, you know, can't really chew or just are in a very weakened state. So that's really the only time I would recommend doing that.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Otherwise, let's chew it.
Let's chew it. Enjoy it.
Yeah. Now, are you of that recommendation that when people chew that they absolutely chew thoroughly, not just wolf it on down, but chew it and mix it with the saliva and enzymes?
That is a good idea. I can't claim that I chew every bite 50 times. I'm probably I just have so much energy that and I tend to multitask a lot. But I will say this: I never drink with meals, because when you drink with meals, that tends to encourage people to hardly chew at all and then swallow their food whole. So I chew my food adequately.
So you mean like you don't have fine wine or?
No, I don't drink with meals at all.
Okay.
Because you dilute your natural digestive enzymes. You know, wine was really never my thing. I don't know why. I guess because as a child I was always allowed to drink wine, even when I was like, you know, 2 and 3 years old. You have a finger full of wine and then, you know, water to fill up the glass. So it was never any big deal, you know.
Yeah.
When I was 21, I did not go to bars and drink at every bar. I was not one of those kids. I guess I was a little odd. But I was into health even back then, so.
Oh, well, good. All right. So, this is pretty exciting. Now.
And, you know, because you mentioned wine, I do have to say that right now there's a lot of talk about, well, I've heard wine was good for me. What about all the antioxidants and the
Or organic wine.
Yeah. I mean, wine is actually permitted in a raw diet. And so there are a lot of wonderful raw restaurants that have a great sulfite-free wine list. But I also want to just remind people that all of the benefits from wine you can also get from eating organic grapes, too. It doesn't have to be made into wine.
Oh. So I didn't know, does that mean that we're not actually alcohol deficient?
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that, Ken.
Oh. Jeez, I wish I had known that in college. Whoa, what a difference that would have made. My goodness. So, and And to me, what's so exciting, if I'm hearing correctly, and I want to invite you folks, be sure, to go look at Brigitte's website. That's BRIGITTEMARS.com. You hear the joy in her voice, which is wonderful, and it comes from her lifestyle. And then you look and you see these books. Oh, get ready. And of course, when people want to consult with you, is there a good number to reach you at?
Yes, my number's on the website, and I'll give my number to people right now. It's 303-442-4967. I'm also in the Boulder phone book, Brigitte Mars. I'm not hard to find. And, you were saying something about joy in my voice. I have to tell listeners a really big secret. Eating raw foods makes you happy. It really affects your mood and your consciousness. And I am so amazed. I never was told that. I experienced that. And I've had a lot of other people tell me that. So that's good news. Boy.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. I feel so privileged to be able to be in your presence and get some of this wonderful advice. So many people are dealing with, blood sugar issues, low blood sugar, high blood sugar, different kinds of things. I mean, this is pre-diabetic.
Right.
And I know that that swings in blood sugar can certainly affect people's moods.
Absolutely.
So on a raw diet, how do you take that into consideration?
That's an excellent question, Ken. So I encourage people to eat a piece of fruit rather than drinking fruit juice, because drinking juice, you're getting all the sweetness from the fruit without the fiber to slow down its absorption.
Mm.
So, a mistake that a lot of, early health conscious people make, when I say early, I mean when they're new to it, they think, oh, I need to drink lots of apple juice or lots of grape juice. That can really imbalance your blood sugar. And then the other thing is refined carbohydrates, white rice and flour products and lots of corn. Potatoes are not considered a grain, but a vegetable, but even eating white potatoes. So I feel that be careful of overdoing grains and flour products. The way that I do grains, first of all, the really only grains I eat are not really grains. They're seeds. I sprout quinoa and I sprout buckwheat, which is in the Polygonaceae or buckwheat family. So buckwheat is not related to wheat, but I'll sprout buckwheat and then use that to make scones or cinnamon buns. All these recipes are in my book, cranberry buns and so forth. So I think people need to be careful of that. So, and of course, sugar, 200 years ago, the average American ate about 4 pounds of sugar a year. Now that number is up to 152 pounds of sugar a year.
Oh, my God.
And sugar's like a drug. People don't realize how much they're eating because sugar dissolves. And, again, I've had people say, well, I don't really eat any sugar. But then I see them drinking a soda, and the soda, average soda has about 9 teaspoons of sugar. Average piece of pie or cake might have 12 teaspoons of sugar. Maybe a candy bar has, 10 teaspoons of sugar. If you were to start, counting out the teaspoons of sugar on a little plastic baggie on a postal scale, you would see that you're not even considered an addict if you're eating your weight in sugar a year. And so my feeling is get your sweetness from fresh fruits and vegetables. Be careful of overdoing really sweet fruits. I think it's easy for people when they get into raw foods or into vegetarianism to overdo things like honey and dates and raisins and figs. I think these things are fine, but the discipline is to eat lots of greens, green leafy vegetables, things like avocados, raw nuts and seeds, and not to overdo the sticky foods, because they can actually stick to your teeth, and just like sugar, contribute to tooth decay. Now, I do occasionally enjoy dates and raisins. They're certainly better than sugar because they also provide minerals and vitamins. But there are some other wonderful sweeteners to use, like raw agave syrup. But again, in Chinese medicine, I haven't forgotten all I've learned in Chinese medicine, there are 5 flavors. And Americans tend to over-focus on the sweet and salty flavor, but we should also remember that there's the bitter flavor, which you find in greens like kale and dandelion greens. There's the pungent flavor, which we find in spicy foods like garlic and horseradish and cayenne and ginger and cinnamon. There's the, rather than getting the salty flavor from salt, we should be including some sea vegetables in our diet like kelp or dulse or hijiki or wakame. And the sweet flavor is probably best found in things like sweet potatoes, winter squash, apples, pears, things like that. And then one last flavor, the sour flavor, is found in things like berries and tart apples. So we need to mix it up and not get too hung up on. It's got to be sweet and salty.
Okay. And transitionally, if, for instance, don't know if you get into in any of your books being able to create what would be raw crackers, because I mean we live in a culture, chips and dip, whether it's chips and salsa or chips and dip, got to have some crunching going on.
Absolutely, and Rawson has lots of ideas for crackers and corn chips and all of that, flax crackers made in a variety of flavors. So absolutely, right now I have basil flax crackers in my dehydrator. I also have some orange coconut flax crackers going in the dehydrator, which I'll probably serve to my grandson when he comes over tonight.
Okay. And you find the kids, I mean, so much kids love sweet treats. Are you able on working with your diet to satisfy those cravings in other ways?
Yes, I mean, like any children, the earlier you start them with natural foods, the easier it is. It's a lot more difficult to get kids off of junk foods. So I really encourage starting them out that way in the beginning. But, you know, my granddaughter, Rainbow's daughter, that lives in L.A., loves to eat seaweed and avocados and, you know, kale. I mean, things that you don't expect kids to like. My grandson, who lives here in Boulder, he, you know, there's a lot of things that he likes that are healthy, but it's a kind of a question of finding out what he likes. He likes fruit more than vegetables. So, you know, I think you have to make it fun, take children into the kitchen with you and help them to see what you're doing in food preparation. Give them little tasks like, you know, help make the salad dressing, shake up the bottle with the lid on tight, of course. Or,
I've tried it the other way.
Yeah. Or, you know, toss the salad with these big thongs or something. And then when kids take pride in what they made, they're a lot more likely to want to eat it because, look, Daddy, I helped Mommy make it. It's so cool. Or the other way around. Look, Mommy, I helped Daddy make it. So,
yeah.
And showing children, you know, growing a little garden, because when they can have that experience of like, you know, I planted the seed and I picked the snow peas, there's a lot of excitement there. Like, you're helping to feed your family. And my daughter Sunflower and I, as you mentioned earlier, we do an herb camp for kids, although we're taking a break this year until her son gets a little older. But we had the kids growing sprouts, and they love that because, you know, it's a little miracle that can happen in 3 or 4 days that, like, wow, we started them, and, like, 3, 4 days later, we're harvesting them.
Ah, so they get some of that instant gratification.
Yes, and then they get to, you know, pick the sprouts or rinse them, or it's just, you know, a little small miracle in the kitchen that doesn't take, like, you know, weeks and weeks of patience. And patience is good. Gardening teaches us patience. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, learning to sprout a few things can be very insightful.
Ah, okay. So it gets the kids involved in something where they can contribute and also gives them a chance to have something that's really healthy.
Absolutely.
Wow. Now that's great. I love it. And any tips, because so many of the people out there, either themselves or family members, are doing junk foods. And you'd mentioned it can be challenging to wean someone off of that stuff. And can you share any advice about ways to move in that direction?
That's such an important question. And one of my friends, Victoria Butenko, wrote a book called The 12 Steps to Raw Food, because she found that a lot of people, you know, they want to go raw, but, you know, nobody else they know is doing it. And so she really took the 12-step program that is used for alcoholics to apply it to raw food. So, it, you know, you have to take it one day at a time. You have to, it helps to have a support system. And so find your local raw potluck group. You know, even if you Google, you know, Boulder raw groups or Denver raw groups or Fort Collins raw groups, there are raw potlucks. If you can't find one, start one. Put a sign up in the health food store. If you feel weird about having people come to your house that you don't know, see if you can have it at the library or, you know, college campus or in a park or something like that, especially as the weather's getting nicer. Give your invite your friends over for a wonderful raw dinner that you make so they can see that it's not just all salad. And then next time, have a raw dinner and tell all your friends, even though they're not raw, that it's a raw potluck, and so they need to bring something raw to it. And they'll figure it out. They'll get a book or they'll Google something off the internet. And if they're really clueless, you know, they could always bring some carrot sticks or organic strawberries. I mean, we're all as good in this regard. And then, you know, another transition for some people might be, you know, when they go out to a restaurant, especially if they're still eating meat or fish, consider having whatever animal protein you have on a big salad rather than with noodles or potatoes or rice. That way you're still getting a lot of enzymes to help you digest the animal food. And, you know, there are some raw foodists who still eat some animal products. They eat fish or sushi or turkey jerky. So, you know, I'm advocating a more, you know, vegetarian or vegan diet because I think it's the best thing for the planet. But I also want people to feel that there's something for everybody and there's no raw police out there saying, oh, I saw you, you know, eat this. I think we're just all doing the best we can. But it is a little bit like an addiction. And Victoria Butenko, again, author of 12 Steps to Raw Food, says, you know, if you keep eating a little bit of cooked food, it's really easy when you're kind of lonely or sad or traveling to get really back into it. And, you know, she kind of says, you know, like, just say no and you know, stay on the path as best you can. It's easier now than ever. Go to your local health food store and ask somebody to show you what are some of the raw things, and you'll find that there's crackers and there's entrees and there's candy bars, and of course there's always produce. You know, I found a great way to fly because they don't let you bring enough water. I bring two or three cucumbers with me on the airplane because that gives you a lot of water, and they're not confiscating cucumbers yet. So.
Oh, okay. No one tried to hijack a plane using a cucumber?
Not yet.
Oh, okay. Well, I certainly want to be there for that. I need a good laugh, and I think that would work. Wow.
But water doesn't have to come in plastic bottles. Our fruit and vegetables abound with drinkable, you know, grace of God water. So
now, is celery pretty high water content?
Yes, it is, but not as much as a cucumber.
Cucumber kind of wins the prize there.
It really does. I mean, and a part of the way you could tell is if you were to juice, you know, a stalk of celery and you were to juice the same length of cucumber, you'd get a lot more water from a cucumber.
Okay.
But most fruits and vegetables are high water. Mm. Tomatoes, I mean, very juicy. And, you know, some things are juicier than others. You can get a really juicy apple or you can get a dry apple. So
now,
it kind of depends.
Sure. When you mentioned tomatoes, there's people talking about avoiding nightshades.
Yes. And, you know, I used to actually be a macrobiotic chef and cook everything. And I used to avoid nightshades, which include potatoes, tomatoes, eggplant, green pepper. Nowadays, I do use some tomatoes and some red pepper, which is the ripest and the highest in vitamin C. But I found that using a little bit of those foods, it seems fine in this diet.
Okay. Now, people can reach you at 303-442-4967 or go to your website, www.brigittemars.com. Wow.
Brigitte, many blessings.
I've had so much fun.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You have a wonderful day, and my beloved listeners, keep tuning in to Advanced Living for more good fun. God bless you all. Have a wonderful week, and goodbye for now. Let go and let God, let myself do.